Hey, welcome to Crossroads, folks. A Green New Deal Part 2 is now in the works by the same old actors as before, but this one, of course, has many of the same traits as the last one. You might remember back when AOC proposed the Green New Deal the first time, right? And she was saying we have to get rid of farting cows, and I'm actually not exaggerating, that was actually in the original document, and tear down and wreck. You know, this would never happen. It's utterly insane, and everybody laughed about it. And then we saw that the Democrats started actually pushing all of it. Not only them, in fact, but even globally, there were similar pushes to this. In fact, even in parts of, like, Australia and New Zealand, they're trying to put monitors on the faces of cows that will tax the farmers whenever the cow burps or farts. It sounds far out, but this is what some of these folks apparently believe in. But folks, guess what? AOC and her pals, they're now rolling out phase two of that big plan. PJ Media said this: Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other squad members, the far left of the Democrat Party, have recycled some old ideas from the 1970s. I'd say maybe taken from the early 1800s and Karl Marx more so, but regardless, they took ideas from the 1970s, gussied them up with climate change, mumbo-jumbo, and presto, another federal program that's the same as other federal programs that have failed time and time again to do anything but separate citizens from their hard-earned money. And they say, quote, in these difficult times, we must move forward boldly to address the systemic and existential crisis facing us today, and that includes urgently combating climate change and making sure every American has a safe and decent place to call home, Bernie Sanders said at a press conference, with the Capitol building making a splendid backdrop. Now, briefly, folks, briefly, right? The existential crisis facing us today. I would say, frankly, that the existential crisis is the fact that these woke, corrupt systems are destroying Western civilization. I'd say the fact that over and over again, the system these people try to promote has destroyed civilization after civilization, that it has led to genocide and famine and tyranny over and over and over again. And for some reason, these folks still seem to think it's a great idea. I'd say that pattern recognition is one of the core tenets, core foundations of basic human logic. And for some reason, people who seem to believe in socialism lack that ability of pattern recognition, right? But regardless, folks, regardless, a place for every American to live, a decent place to call home. Frankly, I wish they'd stop destroying the decency of our homes. But regardless, this is what they're saying, right? And they continue saying, it is unacceptable that on a single given night in America, over 650,000 people are homeless. Look, I have an idea. Call me crazy. But maybe instead of giving free houses and free food and so on to 7 million illegal aliens, they could actually give houses to homeless instead. Or maybe they should treat American homeless people with at least similar decency as they do to illegal aliens. I don't know why, for example, that they're forcing out veteran services to house illegal immigrants. I don't know, for example, why they're flooding them into poor neighborhoods all across the United States. I don't know why they're buying up hotel rooms for them, but again, they're doing that. They could actually model the same thing. Maybe, hey, deport the illegal aliens and offer the same services they were getting to the allegedly 650,000 people homeless people. I'll say personally, though, I don't think that solves anything. I don't think subsidizing a problem fixes a problem, and frankly, I'd say that's the biggest gap in this whole narrative, frankly. They think that if you have a fire and you pour enough money on it, magically the fire is going to go out instead of burning up all that money. If a person's homeless, oftentimes, and there's some exceptions to this, but oftentimes it's caused by poor decisions they have made. If you want to fix their situation, you have to fix the problems that caused it. And if you don't fix the problems that caused it, it's going to repeat itself no matter how much money you pour onto it. And we've seen that over and over again, frankly. If people don't want to change themselves, they're not going to change. And you can pour all the money you want into the problem. It's not going to fix the individual and the problems they have that led to the outcome they're experiencing. And if you try to eliminate failure by subsidizing it, failure doesn't go away. All you do is subsidize failing lifestyles, failing habits, and failing systems. That is one of the core flaws in socialism, over and over again. But regardless, Bernie Sanders, who lacks pattern recognition on understanding the history of socialism, says it is unacceptable that in the richest country in the history of the world, people are choosing between paying rent and putting food on the table. I would add on that that one of the reasons we have to choose between paying rent and putting food on the table is because of the high competition for housing caused mostly by mass illegal immigration. It is recognized as being the main cause of rising house prices in Canada. Why do we not recognize that here in the United States? Why can we not talk about it here? In Canada, which is to the left of America, Canada is like if San Francisco was a country, right? That's Canada. They acknowledge that the rising housing costs in Canada are being caused by mass migration. They understand that when you have a limited supply of something and you double or triple or quadruple the demand for that limited supply, the prices go up. And when you have limited numbers of houses and you flood the country with more people demanding that same pool of housing, prices are going to go up. The costs of living are going up because of these bad policies. And then we're seeing inflation because of overspending. If they want to fix this problem, you don't subsidize it. You don't tax people more and make their lives even harder. You don't dig us deeper into the trench they're digging. No. If you want to fix the problem, you make people's lives easier by taxing them less and alleviating the pressure that you've artificially placed on top of them. Maybe, again, deport the illegal immigrants, or at the very least clear some of the federal government, federal policies and even local policies that restrict, you know, the building of new homes. Make it so that people can more easily construct housing if you want to fix that problem. Don't, again, restrict that. Make it so that if they pour $1 million into building housing for, let's say, homeless people, they end up building like 3 tiny homes for $1 million and then they never open anyways, which is what you have in California. They'll spend $1 million building a glorified porter potty because of all the red tape and regulations and say, look at the great job we did. We're building services for homeless people. Yeah, money well spent, right? But regardless, folks, it says here, the federal government has spent $1 trillion on constructing and subsidizing public housing since the 1970s. That's 50 years of failure to decently house low-income people. Again, it is subsidized failure. And they say there are other ways to subsidize public housing, but the federal government is stuck simply and mindlessly throwing money at the problem. But back on this bill, Green New Deal Chapter 2, it says the bill would authorize $162 billion to $234 billion over the next 10 years to enhance and expand public housing with climate change-centric policies. Maybe, folks, we'll finally get those pods to live in, right? Maybe we'll finally get those nice little pods that they've been promising us. That's, of course, according to Washington Examiner. It says that squad member Jamal Bowman thinks that the Green New Deal 2 for housing, along with the Green New Deal for public schools, will be a form of reparations. I assume that means he wants to put, you know, former people who've come from histories of slavery in those. I assume he doesn't mean Irish people or things like that. But regardless, he says, I also want to plug, we must also pass the Green New Deal for public schools. Because the Green New Deal for public schools working in conjunction with the Green New Deal for public housing is a form of reparations for our historically marginalized communities, Bowman said during a speech. Folks, I kind of want some reparations for the money we're like sending to every corner of the face of the planet. I kind of want some reparations for like the badly spent tax dollars we have subsidizing the invasion of our country with mass illegal immigration. I would kind of like some reparations for the poorly spent tax dollars we have on issue after issue. I think that'd be great. Maybe a big old tax return and all the misappropriated funds, right? But regardless, this is what they're talking about. And also when they talk about, for example, you know, the school systems, remember, the more money they've poured into it, they're not fixing the problems. They're oftentimes subsidizing the problems. Look at what happened with public education and even basic literacy rates since the formation of the Department of Education. It's gone like this. You would think that the creation of the Department of Education would have made the quality of education go up, why did it instead go down? Well, one of the reasons is when you subsidize a problem, you entrench the problem. You do not fix the problem. You have poor communities like Detroit and Chicago and so on like that, where they're spending like $40,000 a year on students. And we find that the quality of education is some of the worst in the country. We find literacy rates are some of the worst in the country. Why is that? Why is it that despite giving almost double the amount of money to some of these areas per child, the quality of education is actually worse? Again, I'll go back to the point that just subsidizing it does not fix it. You have to fix the problem at its core. And I don't know what that may be in those cases, but frankly, we can say the way it's been being done is not working. Teachers' unions having the old golden rice bowls that they can't be taken away from them. Teachers who can't be fired if they do their jobs wrong. Schools that don't go out of business if they fail. If you make it private, on the other hand, if the quality of education doesn't work, parents look for a better option. And when they find a better option, they keep doing that until they find something that works. Normally, the free market lets things fail. And if you don't let things fail, frankly, you're going to be subsidizing a failed system, and you're going to live in a failed system. You have to let things that do not work fail. And in this case, I'd say a lot of the public school systems have, in fact, failed. They're being prevented from going through the process of failing and then reforming through subsidized, you know, programs like this. Rather than, of course, maybe giving parents the money to use the money elsewhere, let them get into private schools elsewhere. Use, for example, charter schools. Maybe don't regulate everything and think a one-size-fits-all model is going to fix the whole problem. That is the problem, again, of this dictatorial, tyrannical policy of trying to manage everything from the top and not recognizing the unique situations on the ground that is one of the cornerstones of socialism. Now, folks, speaking of failed systems, in other news, the corporate media are claiming former President Donald Trump plans to pre-rig the 2024 elections. Folks, he's not rigging the elections. He's pre-rigging the elections. So to fight back against this alleged threat, the Biden administration is pre-rigging the pre-rigging of the elections with a new election superstructure, they're calling it. And I'll be going into this after a short word from our sponsor. Hey, welcome back. Folks, the corporate media are claiming that former President Donald Trump has a big plan in the works, and he's going to pre-rig the 2024 elections. So again, to fight back against this threat, the Biden administration has a big plan themselves, and they're creating a full system to fight against Trump in the elections if he wins, and also creating systems to pre-rig the pre-rigging to make sure he doesn't rig it. And this includes a system of so-called war games and a legal system that will try to prevent Trump from taking office if he declares victory, because if Trump declares victory, they say it's a threat to democracy. Rolling Stone says this. They say for years, Donald Trump has made it abundantly clear that if he doesn't win the 2024 presidential election, he is willing to cheat and steal it. Folks, just imagine, when have we ever seen a maybe president or former president try to steal an election? I'd say maybe we've seen some evidence of this, but remember, we're not allowed to talk about it because it's conspiracy theory unless they say it, right? But they say that since President Joe Biden's inaugural address, according to sources with intimate knowledge of the situation, maybe the hammer guy, maybe one of those guys, right? They say Biden and his inner circle have been drawing up meticulous plans and creating a large legal network focused on wargaming a close election finish in which the president, Donald Trump, or former president, and Republican Party launched a scorched earth, big lie-fueled crusade. God forbid the American people elect Donald J. Trump as president, because if he does, folks, it must mean the election was rigged, they say. They say over the past year, Team Biden has been conducting war games, crafting complex legal strategies, and devoting extensive resources to prepare for, as one senior Biden administration official puts it, quote, all hell breaks loose scenarios. They say the preparations, preparing to pre-rig the pre-rigging, include a planning for a contingency plan if Trump actually wins, in which Biden's margin of victory, they say, is so razor thin that Trump and the GOP launch a tidal wave of legal challenges and political maneuvers to rerun his 2020 election strategy, declare victory anyways, and try to will it into existence. Maybe they'll say that Trump won, but the American people will not realize that Biden won. And that's the threat they say that we face, folks. Maybe there'll be so many strange incidents of pristine ballots showing up in the dead of night, of toilets overflowing and shutting down the elections in four states so they freeze the elections. And then all of a sudden, Biden's votes spike vertically, magically. But you can't question it, remember. And if you do question it, and you go and make, for example, dueling electors, or for example, if you call for legal investigations, and even if the court denies that and declines to actually investigate it, you can declare that the court looked into it. And then you can declare that Trump actually tried stealing the election. Because that's what they say happened last time, folks. Now they say this, right? They say, quote, President Biden has been worried for a while now that Donald Trump is going to try to steal the election if it's very close on election day, said a source familiar with Biden's thinking. They said, quote, if that ends up being the case, we are also expecting the Republican Party to go into overdrive to help him steal it. We are continuing to build out the infrastructure to ensure that doesn't happen. Again, if President Biden wins and Trump and MAGA Republicans try to confuse everyone in so chaos. Folks, let's lay out what they're doing, right? They're claiming that Trump wants to steal the election. What's that based on? Well, it's the fact that Trump questioned all the weird things that happened in 2020 and said that he won and said that, for example, if you eliminate, let's say, signature verification, which they did, they didn't verify the signatures. If you have ballots showing up in boxes in the dead of night, which they were. If you have mysterious ballots appearing out of nowhere that have no down-ballot voting, look like they've been photocopied, they're not even filled in with pencil or marker, it's filled in with ink from a photocopy machine, and the only vote they have is Joe Biden, and nothing, no down-ballot voting, so they didn't vote for other candidates. And they're all exactly the same, and they're pristine. There's no crease marks, there's no sign of them having been used or moved around before that, as if they just came out of a photocopier. They're saying you're not allowed to question that. And if you do, you may be trying to pre-rig the election. That's what they're suggesting. Not to mention the long list of other weird things. Like, for example, putting up poster board in front of the windows so that poll watchers cannot actually watch what you're doing. Because, of course, you know, why would poll watchers need to watch what you're doing if not to harass them for maybe doing things that look shady, for example, right? All of this stuff happened in 2020. And they say that if you question this, you're trying to rig the election. Let that sink in. They're saying that if you're concerned about the elections being rigged, then you're the one trying to rig the elections by being concerned about the rigging. And so because you're concerned about it and you're watching to make sure they don't, like, eliminate signature verification, eliminate ballot checks to make sure they're not being photocopied, maybe check and make sure that people aren't stuffing ballots into drop boxes from people picked up from, like, NGOs and so on. That you know, of course, if you have any issue with that, then you're the trouble, not that. That's what they're framing it as, right? They're saying that because some people are concerned about the elections being rigged, the very act of being more vigilant is an act of rigging the elections. That's what they're saying. And so in order to stop that, they have to create a huge infrastructure to make sure that people can't do that. How does any of this make sense? Just being blunt. How does any of this make sense? In what wild, twisted logic does this seem logical? But regardless, they say Biden World's closely held list of nightmare scenarios in which Democratic legal teams would have to battle it out tooth and nail with Republican counterparts before, during, or after Election Day 2024 has grown comically long, says one source with direct knowledge of the matter. And they say Biden campaign officials and other Democrats familiar with the topic tell Rolling Stone that a key concern for which step-by-step game planning has already begun is how to robustly respond if Trump and others, leading Republicans, try to engineer another January 6th power grab. Maybe they have grandma, you know, going into the Capitol building and praying for 10 minutes, and they're saying in order to stop grandma from going and praying in the Capitol for 10 minutes and facing a year in prison, which just happened, by the way, that they have to, of course, protect us against this dangerous threat to democracy. Personally, if I could give recommendations, there's a few things I would recommend. Maybe put no climb fences around the building. If Trump authorizes the deployment of the National Guard and tells you he wants to do it, maybe accept it. Maybe make sure that you have riot police there with riot shields and not just the Capitol Police. Maybe make sure that you actually, like, you know, lock the doors and don't open the doors. And don't, when somebody waves to you on the video camera and the team that was there when Trump was still speaking at the Ellipse, maybe don't push the button to open the electronic doors for them and leave it open. Just some ideas. Maybe don't engage in unauthorized use of force where police are firing down on crowds with rubber bullets and so on. Maybe don't throw smoke bombs deep into the crowd and then blow the smoke back at the police lines when you don't have gas masks, so police have to flee back into the building. Just some basic, you know, security recommendations I could possibly give to make sure such a thing doesn't happen. I'd also say maybe make sure that the people overseeing it don't, you know, eliminate all possible forms of security and then have their in-laws go there with a video team to try to record the whole thing to use it as propaganda later, while they're, of course, have their own committee assigned to investigate it while destroying evidence. My personal recommendations on how to make sure such a scenario doesn't happen again, you know, but just some recommendations, right? Just some recommendations. Now, the story mentions the various challenges Trump and Republicans made to the 2020 elections after they believed that Biden stole it, which I believe happened. It describes this as a campaign of a blitz of lawsuits, rabid conspiracy theories, attempts to block certification, and slates of fake electors, which then culminated with January 6th and the protests at the Capitol. And of course, this general framing of Trump in the 2020 elections, it's used in some of the legal attacks. This is one of the main narratives you see being used, right? Including in Georgia, including in the efforts of special counsel Jack Smith. Basically, Rolling Stone is suggesting, though, that if Biden allegedly wins in a small number of areas, if the election is much closer, that efforts like this would be limited on a smaller scale. And so they're suggesting the Biden team is preparing for this and will have to fight for the elections through other means. Now, they note as well that basically Biden lawyers are getting ready for demands for recounts. They're planning for any other possibility of what Trump could allegedly try to do in order to challenge the general the election. And folks, I'd say, you know, aside from all of this, there is a very real chance that election officials may refuse to certify the 2024 elections. This is actually something plausible. And in fact, this is actually one of the big scare scenarios that the Republicans and the Democrats are actually raising. It's both sides. The big corporate media are pushing this, though, as if it was an agenda. But I'll be talking more about this only on Epic TV, because YouTube doesn't like me talking about these types of things that have to deal with uncomfortable truth, apparently. So for those of you on YouTube, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter, if you want to join me for the rest of the episode and our live Q&A, come and ask questions, click on the link in the description below this video, and not only will you get the rest of my show, you'll also get access to other great shows like Facts Matter with Roman Balmakov, American Thought Leaders, Fallout with Dr. Robert Malone, and a lot of great other shows, including also some of the documentaries that I've done, like The Final War, The 100-Year Plot to Defeat America. I'll show you a quick trailer for that before we jump. And again, if you'd like to watch it, click the link in the description below.
The greatest threat facing the United States is the CCP.
The Epoch Times investigation team had studied the CCP for years, but what we uncovered was yielding evidence beyond our imagination.
With Chairman Mao, with the Prime Minister, our talks have been characterized by frankness.
The Clinton administration said, oh, don't worry about it. This will be a poison pill for China.
China's strategic goal is to make sure that the U.S. has four enemies, and one of them must be a terrorist group.
We are giving of our life's blood so that the Chinese Communist Party can survive and thrive.
Now look, with all of this being said, there's a very real chance that the election officials may actually refuse to certify the 2024 elections. This is not totally unfounded, actually. But this is one of the big scare scenarios the Democrats and the corporate media are pushing right now. Let me show you a few headlines that have been going around actually for a few years. New York Times in October of 2022 said this. They said it's 2024, Trump backers won't certify the elections. What next? Legally, raising concerns of what happens, right? The Associated Press in November of 2022 said this: election certification delays few, but a test run for 2024. And they were suggesting at the time during the midterms, of course, that what we were seeing with some officials refusing to certify the elections could become a model for 2024. Washington Post said just last year, November 2023, can Congress refuse to certify a Biden win? Answers to your 2024 questions. MSNBC also last year said this. They said, Republican refusal to certify local election results seen as a dress rehearsal for 2024 chaos. Now look, basically this is what it said. The general narrative is that election officials could just refuse to certify the 2024 elections if Biden wins. And this could be on a lot of different grounds. You know, maybe they believe that Biden stole the election, or if they believe that illegal aliens have found ways to vote and we can't certify the election because of it. Or they believe there were other issues that caused too many doubts around the integrity of the elections. There need to be actual investigations before they're willing to certify. Because you can't certify an election, technically, if there's plausible reason to believe it was rigged. Basically, that's what the law is. But they're suggesting that if you maybe just ignore all the weird things that happen, that that's the right way to do it, and that if you have problems with it, that, again, the protections in place legally in the United States that let you question the integrity of something, that if you believe there's fraud, you don't certify it. Right? They're saying that that could be an act of fraud itself. Remember, one of the reasons why that power even exists is to make sure that anomalies, like frankly what we watched Democrats do over and over again in 2020, and I'll say right now, I 100% believe Biden rigged the 2020 elections. Based on all the evidence I've seen, they massively rigged the elections. And I'd say that officials who certified that election while ignoring all that evidence. And yeah, people say, well, the courts reject. Yeah, the courts didn't even look into it. The courts didn't even investigate. They didn't even look into the evidence. And the cases where they have looked into the evidence, they did find there was fraud. But again, the possibility of election officials refusing to certify the election is not that far out. So there is some credibility to this. Look, as they noted, there were some in the 2022 midterms who refused to certify the elections. Let me show you, just as a flashback to this, this is how ProPublica described their reasoning. They said, again, 2022, right? That during the midterms. A week and a half after last November's vote, members of the Board of Elections in Surry County, North Carolina, gathered in a windowless room to certify the results. And again, the reason we have this process is to make sure that a rigged election is not certified. That is the purpose of this. That is why this process exists. That is why these powers exist. But they say, it was supposed to be a routine task, marking the end of a controversial season during which election deniers harassed and retaliated against the country's elections director. Not long into the meeting, however, a staffer distributed a letter from two board members stating they were refusing to certify. The reason, they said, quote, in their view, a federal judge who'd struck down a North Carolina voter ID law for discriminating against minorities had transformed the state's election laws into a grotesque and perverse sham. Well, heck, I'd agree with that. Eliminate processes to make sure that fraud doesn't take place. How do you know that fraud doesn't take place? If you believe that the elections were under threat, why would you get rid of the protections on the elections? if they believe Trump is going to steal the elections, why don't they put in signature verification? Why don't they put in, you know, voter ID? Why don't they take steps to make sure that illegal aliens are not voting in local elections? Why instead are they doing the opposite? Why have universal mail-in ballots? Why allow, for example, ballot harvesting? If you believe there are threats to something, normally you would increase security, not reduce it. And that raises some questions over what the real thinking of some of these folks is. If they believe that the threat to the election is not, for example, a threat to the mail-in ballots or signatures and so on, if they believe that instead the threat to the election is if people have problems with removing the security of the election, I'd question the entire narrative. Because how would making something less secure be deemed an act of integrity? And how would making something being less secure and people having a problem with that, that the people having a problem with it would be the problem you're looking at, right? It's like a thief saying, this person is guilty of robbing this home because he's putting locks on his doors to prevent me from robbing his home. Like, what kind of deranged logic is this, frankly, right? If you put locks on your home, you're obviously concerned about thieves, therefore you must be a thief, right? Like, this is the deranged logic you see at play here. Obviously, Republicans must be trying to rig the elections because they're trying to make the elections more secure. Sounds a bit fishy to me, folks. But regardless, one of the individuals says, Tim Dearen, one of the two board members who signed the letter, explained at the meeting, quote, we feel the election was held according to law that we have, but that the law is not right. In other words, they feel the laws were altered to allow things that should not have been legal in the first place. If you legalize crime, is it still a crime? If you legalize fraud, is it still fraud? Well, observing these acts, I would say it is something of concern, frankly. And I'd say that just legalizing something that should be illegal in order to weaken the integrity of a system, you can still question the integrity of the system. But they say that election law experts say that these disruptions reveal a weakness in the American electoral system, which relies on thousands of local officials to certify the totals in their counties and municipalities before their results can be aggregated and tallied for state and federal elections. And they say local election officials, quote, could create chaos all the way up the chain by refusing to certify, said Alice Clapman, a senior counsel in election law at the Brennan Center for Justice. Now, look, some officials have also signaled that they may not certify the 2024 elections. In other words, we're already actually kind of seeing this. It's not a concern that is without cause. There are people saying that they may not certify the 2024 elections, given the circumstances and depending what happens. Frankly, I'd say that making a statement ahead of time that you would certify an election regardless of evidence of fraud is not an act in line with the basic duty of that role. In fact, the very reason that that role exists is to be the gatekeeper, to make sure that a rigged election is not certified, or to make sure that if fraud takes place, that it gets held to account. The purpose of that role is to be discerning. And they should not, at least in my opinion, agree to certify something regardless of what takes place. They should say, I'll see what the evidence is. Look, I'm not going to say I'm going to let the thief go, even if he steals. If he steals something, I'll arrest him, right? If he steals something, I'll arrest him. But if he doesn't, I'm not going to arrest him, right? If a crime takes place, yes, it'll be a problem. If it doesn't, there won't. And yes, if they rig the elections, and I believe they did, I'm not going to certify it, but if it's fine, I won't, you know, stop it. How is that a bad thing? But again, this is where the controversy all is right now. You can take, for example, the controversy with Republican Representative Elise Stefanik. The Hill said this, Representative Elise Stefanik, a Republican from New York, on Sunday stopped short of saying she will certify the 2024 election results, saying she will, quote, see if this year's election is legal and valid. So she's saying that she'll certify the elections if it's legal and valid, and that's problematic? That's controversial? How is saying you'll certify an election if it's legal, invalid, controversial. Of course, the implication being they're saying that she stopped short of saying that she would not certify it. The implication of that being if it's not legal and not valid. So why would they want her to certify a not legal and not valid election? Why would they want her to agree to certify regardless of legality and validity? But they say that pressed on the NBC News, you know, show Meet the Press over whether she will vote to certify the 2024 election results, no matter what the result is, no matter what, even if it's not legal or not valid, they said this, right? Stefanik said, "We will see if this is a legal and valid election." How is that a controversial statement? How is that controversial, folks? Regardless. Look, there's the ironic other side to this, though, that the corporate media have been suggesting, ironically, that House Democrats could just act on their own and they could choose to not certify the 2024 elections even if Donald Trump wins the election. They're not saying this based on the checks and balances on the ground, right? The election officials. They're saying this should come through Congress. And this was mainly around the whole case in the 14th Amendment. Or you might remember Democrats are trying to get Trump removed from the ballots. To remove one of the leading candidates from the ballots, you know, to eliminate the ability of people to vote for Donald Trump, you know, to protect democracy, right? They have to remove him from the ballots so you can't vote for him in order to make sure that democracy is protected. This is the logic. The Atlantic said this in February. They said in interviews, senior House Democrats, the House of Representatives folks, would not commit to certifying a Trump win, saying they would do so only if the Supreme Court affirms his eligibility. But during oral arguments, liberal and conservative justices alike seemed inclined to dodge the question of his eligibility altogether and throw the decision to Congress. They said, quote, "That would be a colossal disaster," according to Representative Adam Schiff of California, telling this outlet, of course. And he added, "We already had one horrendous January 6th. We don't need another." It says the justices could conclude definitively that Trump is eligible to serve another term as president. The 14th Amendment bars people who have engaged in insurrection or rebellion from holding office. But it does not define those terms. It says Trump has not been convicted of fomenting an insurrection, nor do any of his 91 indictments charge him with a particular crime on that. But in early 2021, it says, every House Democrat, along with 10 Republicans, voted to impeach Trump for incitement of insurrection. And a significant majority of those lawmakers will still be in Congress next year. In other words, even though there's no legal basis for this, Trump was never charged with insurrection. Trump was never convicted of insurrection. An insurrection can only be declared by Congress as a whole, not just by the House, or by the President of the United States. No insurrection was declared on January 6th, meaning legally no insurrection took place. There's no legal basis for it. The entire thing is moot. But because this is the corporate media narrative and the establishment narrative that has been used to try to remove Trump from office first and then also try to impeach him and then, of course, now try to remove him from the ballots using the 14th Amendment, which, by the way, was determined does not apply to presidents either, right? That whole process has created a type of social understanding not based in fact, not based in evidence, not based in law, but instead based on opinion. And the opinion of some of these members of Congress that Trump did engage in an insurrection, and the opinion of the party, of course, that is trying to push that narrative, that based on that opinion, they're suggesting these individuals could choose to not certify the election. And of course, this is a bit different from what we've been talking about. The local election officials could choose to certify or not certify the election based on evidence of alleged fraud. In other words, if they see evidence of fraud, they believe the election was not carried out in a responsible manner or was done in violation of American law. They can choose not to certify it, and there would have to be an investigation conducted to move things forward. What the Democrats are suggesting in Congress is that they could act independently of all of that and on, not on the basis of law, even going against the Supreme Court decision, by the way, which has now determined that Trump cannot be removed from the ballot, and that, again, a declaration of insurrection would have to have come through either Trump or through Congress, which it did not. And so Trump cannot be removed from the ballot now. But regardless of that, they're saying that of their own opinion, they can use something regardless of the Supreme Court decision and just not certify Trump if he does win. That's what they're saying, folks. I'd ironically say that's borderline insurrection in and of itself. But look, because, you know, remember, a lot of people were being charged January 6th and so on. They're being charged with disrupting an official proceeding. A charge made for Enron. But let's just imagine this actually does apply to what they're saying. If these individuals, not on a legal basis, but instead based on their own imaginations, right, something that was never legally determined, a definition, insurrection, that was never in place through any kind of legal means, other than, again, their own imaginations and other than their own personal opinions, that they could use that to disrupt the official proceeding of the certifying of the President of the United States. Now, again, there is a process for that. There is a legal basis of which, you know, during which members of Congress and, of course, the Vice President decide whether to certify the elections or not, especially as they're counting the Electoral College votes. Kamala Harris is going to be the one reading those. We'll see how that goes. But given this process, we'll, of course, have to see. Will they try to block that process using this opinion? Look, still, though, I'd say the strategy is being pushed regardless of the Supreme Court decision. And in addition to this, there's also the question of what the public would have to say about it. How would the American people react if that were to take place? Well, there's actually been some polling on this. There's been some conducted showing how voters, Republicans and Democrats, would view such a scenario. And it leans more in not supporting such a move, right? So most Americans would not support Congress blocking Trump from being certified as president, but it's actually not by a huge margin. Just the News said this. They said, a recent poll conducted by Rasmussen Reports and the National Pulse found that a majority of voters would oppose congressional Democrats if they refused to certify a 2024 presidential election victory by former President Donald Trump. They say broken down by party, 78% of Republican voters would oppose congressional Democrats refusing to certify a Trump victory, compared to 57% of independents. However, a total of 57% of Democrats would support Congress members who refused to certify a victory by the former president. In other words, you're looking at 57% of Democrats, just over half of Democrat voters, allegedly, again, given the problems with polling in general and how accurate these are. So there's some margin for error. But a large number of Democrat voters would actually support Democrats just on their own blocking Trump from becoming president. The majority of Republicans would not, although some actually would support it. And again, independents are also kind of split as well. Regardless, though, if that were to take place, you could expect very likely to see serious riots in this country, because if Congress blocks the certification of an election, if Congress moves and makes sure that Americans cannot have the leader that they chose, and they take it upon themselves to do that, I do think that most Americans would deem them threats to democracy, or maybe people in, let's say, enemies of the Constitution, frankly. I don't think that would be a good situation for this country. And so this is getting into very, I'd say, dangerous ground for the United States. The risks at play, were that to happen, the possible social disruptions, let's call them, right, the uprisings that would very likely take place, are kind of what's preventing such a scenario in a certain regard. The threat of the American people to the individuals who would, at least want to, it seems, override the opinion of the American people, which is the other big factor playing into all of this right now, I should add. But meanwhile, there are other types of threats to election integrity. One of the big ones is illegal immigrants. There's a push to give illegals, as Biden is flooding the country with literally millions of them, 7 to 9 million under Biden alone. And there's a push almost entirely among Democrats. In different states, you have some Republicans too. They're trying to give them the right to vote in local elections. But even without that, they can impact the elections already through the census. Interestingly, folks, Democrats are standing completely behind that agenda, at least in the Senate. The Epoch Times reported this. Senate Democrats have unanimously defeated Senator Bill Hagerty's proposal to bar illegal immigrants from being counted in the national census. Every single Democrat in the Senate voted against that, meaning they want illegal immigrants to be counted in the census that will decide money given to states, that will decide representation, the number of seats through the House of Representatives, that will decide, for example, even some of the other laws that determine the outcome of the elections, including, for example, even the number of electoral college votes each individual state will get. Democrats voted to allow, in other words, illegal immigrants to impact the federal elections by doing that. Now, that being said, right, it's warned that their numbers go towards informing the apportioning of House seats and the electoral college, as I mentioned. And they say that soon after President Joe Biden took office in 2021, Joe Biden signed an executive order requiring the Census Bureau to determine the population of each state in the United States without regard to whether residents have lawful immigration status. I would say that that itself demonstrates intent and then the carrying out of other operations, which I would frame as a crime. Biden, of course, has flooded the United States with illegal aliens after creating this agreement with the United Nations, rejoining it after Trump pulled us out of it, the Global Compact for Migration, and then again changed the laws to make sure that all those individuals he's importing into the country will be counted in the census so that they will impact the elections. I would say that that act in and of itself would represent foreign meddling in the elections being facilitated by the individual in charge, Biden right now. And I would say that that should be observed possibly in the future as a possible criminal act, frankly. But it notes that the amendment, which would be added to the Equal Representation Act that Senator Hagerty proposed last month, would require the Census Bureau to include a citizen question in any future census. Again, Senator Hagerty tried getting rid of that, and Democrats in their entirety voted against it. They want to make sure that illegals can be counted in the census. It notes that anyone who is not a U.S. citizen, including people with temporary visas and green cards, would be excluded from the ballot for congressional district and electoral college appointments. Census data is collected every 10 years, normally. The proposal was attached to the $460 billion government spending package that was passed on Saturday. And so, to an extent, Republicans allowed that through also. But the measure was shot down, right, because they tried changing it, 45-51, after failing to get even a single Democrat vote. Senator Hagerty released a statement on March 8th accusing Democrats of holding back the amendment for political reasons while also promising to keep pressing this issue. And he said, "Democrats' unanimous opposition to this common sense measure confirms that they're using illegal aliens and sanctuary cities to increase their political power." And I'd say that's a statement made with some ground, actually, because regardless of how you look at it, regardless of what your opinion is on the matter, by allowing them to be counted in the census, that is allowing illegal immigrants to impact the elections and our political system as a whole, including the nature of representative democracy, a republic, whereby we elect leaders to represent us and our interests in Congress. If the elected leaders are representing the interests not just of Americans, but even of non-citizens, even of illegal aliens, then they're representing the interests of a different pool of individuals who have very different demands for what this country should become. Whereas the American citizen might want the government off their backs, the illegal alien will very likely want more services from the government. They want free housing, more money, better food is one of their big things, right? And so, of course, the demands of these individuals and what they would want through a representative democracy, again, through elected leaders, elected to represent them. If they're allowed to be counted in that process, the elected leaders have to represent them now. That will alter our form of government. that will alter the United States. And again, that was voted in its entirety by Democrats just now in Congress. Folks, that said, let's jump into some questions. Let's see here. All right. All right, first question up from Rai66. You say that you pray that Trump will have is safe and had excellent security in you and that he wins. Yeah. That's nice of you. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. Personally, as a religious person, I do believe that things sometimes happen as they're meant to. And sometimes we can't see what that reason is, but who knows, right? Commander McBragg, you're saying, excuse me, but can somebody please explain to me what election interference is if this is not election interference? Yeah, you know, this is one of the more disturbing things about, frankly, a lot of these narratives these days. One of the main tools at play, and you see this with Machiavellianism, you see this with Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and you see these methods of political deception being adopted by a lot of socialists and communists, and unfortunately being used a lot in government. One of the core strategies they use is to accuse others of what they themselves are doing. And so if they want to rig the elections, they'll accuse the other side of wanting to rig the elections. If they want to carry out an insurrection, overthrowing our system, maybe rigging an election and declaring a false victory, right? They'll accuse the other side of trying to stage an insurrection. If they want to, let's say, destroy law and order, they'll accuse the other side of wanting to destroy law and order. If they want to engage in racism, they'll accuse the other people of being racists. If they want to engage in sexism, they'll accuse the others of being sexist. If they want to discriminate against people based on their sexual preferences, maybe you're straight, they will accuse you of, you know, again, discriminating against their decisions or whatever else. They will always accuse others of what they themselves are doing. The things that they represent, they oftentimes accuse others of being, basically. They oftentimes try to demonize people for the very things that they themselves embody. In China, they have a saying for this. They say it's the thief who shouts, "Stop thief," right? The thief, the person stealing, will be the one who yells, "Stop thief!" Or as we used to say in grade school, "Whoever smelt it, dealt it." Similar thing. Sorry to be lewd, but it's the same basic concept, right? Oftentimes it's the person accusing others who actually carried out the act. And of course, we see this over and over again. With the election interference things, I'd say that frankly, them dismantling the systems of election integrity, I'd say that's an act of them frankly rigging the elections. But somehow, this jump in logic, they're trying to conceal the act of destroying election integrity. Getting rid of, for example, signature verification, making it so that problems in the election cannot be questioned, making it so that if you question the integrity of things, you get sued for like $1 billion, making sure that if journalists talk about it, they get censored and deplatformed, making sure that if elected leaders engage in normal processes that have been put in place to, again, work as safeguards, for example, dueling electors, that they designate that a crime to make sure that people don't try it in the future, even though Democrats have done it previously. To make sure, for example, that if pristine ballots show up, that they're still counted and there's no process through which to question it. To make sure that if the normal process of having poll watchers there, even if people block the poll watchers from observing the counting of the votes, again, one of the safeguards, that even if that process is denied, they will still certify the elections. That even if ballots show up in bins in the dead of night, they still count them. That, you know, again, the list goes on and on and on. These, all of them, every single one of these issues, I would regard as a threat to the election. Every single one of those issues deserve to have deeper scrutiny. And every one of those issues, in and of itself, should have been enough evidence to at least put things on hold and properly investigate. But of course, they denied the investigative process. They incriminated, oftentimes, the investigative process, going after people who even tried to have it investigated. And somehow they say that those acts, questioning these things, is an act of trying to interfere with the elections. It's the same thing in China under the Chinese Communist Party. You know, when you have religious believers who are getting killed and persecuted by the CCP, and this is under any communist regime, it's, you know, they, for example, you know, tear down churches. They're dismantling temples. They're tearing down the crosses. They're tearing down pictures of Jesus. And often, and sometimes they're even putting up pictures of Mao Zedong, putting up pictures of Xi Jinping and making it so you can, you know, worship your party leaders. They make it so that if you go to a Christian church, you can't sing Christian hymns. You have to sing Communist Party, like, propaganda hymns instead. They make it so that if you have the Ten Commandments on the wall of a church in China, you're not allowed to have the First Commandment because the party's above God in their eyes. It's these types of things. You see the same thing in the persecution of Falun Gong, which is one of the bigger persecutions in China, where, for example, if people talk about the persecution, if they talk about the genocide, one of the main things the CCP and its agents try to do to cover it up is they accuse these people of getting engaged in politics. How is it bad? How are you getting engaged in politics if you criticize somebody for persecuting you, or you criticize somebody for murdering your wife, or for torturing your cousin, or for throwing your mom in prison, which happens in China? How is it that if your family member is imprisoned, tortured, and killed by a communist government, that somehow that's okay, but if you question it, if you criticize it, you're the one who's incriminated? How does that twisted logic work? But that's what the CCP does. They say, oh, these people are getting engaged in politics. They're getting engaged in politics. And they make it sound like the victims and the families of victims are the bad guys rather than the one carrying out the crime. It's the same form of logic you see here, that it's not election fraud to rig an election. It's election fraud to question the rigging of an election. You see how that logic works? That's what they're doing. It's the same strategy. It's the same exact strategy. Chris Ingram, you're saying audit everything twice. Start as soon as the first vote is cast. I would agree. Frankly, I'd say even from the standpoint of basic scrutiny and the very standpoint of Americans losing faith in the integrity of the elections, if anything, they should make sure that transparency is through the roof this time. They should make sure that Americans are certain that there was no fraud taking place. They should take extra steps to reassure the American public of the integrity of the election system, not dismantle it, not criticize you if you question it. They should try to alleviate the concerns rather than try to incriminate concern. Otherwise, people are going to doubt the outcome. But you continue by stating, every ballot needs to be associated with the ID of a legal citizen. If anyone tries to stop the auditing process, they should be immediately arrested for election interference, etc. Chris, I would 100% agree with you. And frankly, I think that that process would reassure Americans about the integrity of our system and very likely bring some order back to this country, because I think that people are so disenfranchised by what we've watched over the last few years that the country's becoming unstable. I'd say that our system is becoming unstable. And rather than try to attack people who have these doubts, they should try to reassure people who have these doubts. And frankly, the fact that they're not trying to reassure people and the fact that they're just trying to attack them instead, I think is making the problem worse for them, frankly. And frankly, I'd also question why they're attacking people for having those concerns. They should allow us to debate openly. They should allow us to not be censored when we talk about it. You know, I can't even talk about a lot of this on YouTube, which is, you know, thank goodness we have Epic TV, right? If we were on YouTube, they'd censor me for talking about most of this. I would not be able to raise most of these issues. And so it's only because we have our own platform that we can have these types of conversations. You know, you're not going to see a lot of this in the public. And so a lot of the public, they're never even going to really face these issues, which is, again, why I think it's important for people to speak openly. Don't let yourself be censored. Talk to your friends and family. Because I do think that information and freedom of information is one of the backbones of the American system. The nature of elected governance, which is what we have, is that you have to have an informed public to engage in that decision process. If you eliminate the information, then the voter no longer has information to pull from when they go and cast their vote. And I'd say that even censorship in that regard should be deemed as a form of election interference. If they prevent us from being exposed to certain types of information, which would challenge, you know, one side of the political aisle, politicized censorship in this case, I'd say that's one of the bigger forms of election interference, actually. But again, it goes back to that thing where it's not wrong for them to upend election laws. What is deemed wrong is if you question them upending election laws, you see? Cindy Frams, you're saying, sounds like an awful lot like communism. It most certainly does. I wonder why that is. Maybe some of them are communists, I'd say. And I'd say communism and socialism, it's the same thing. Just again, socialism is the system, communism is the belief. And I think I mentioned before that the terms were used interchangeably. I think I said up until Mussolini's March on Rome. Actually, the terms were used interchangeably until the Bolshevik Revolution. It was around 1917, right? During the Bolshevik Revolution, when communism and socialism stopped being used completely interchangeably, and when there started being more clear definitions separating the two concepts, mainly because a lot of communists had issue with Lenin, because, you know, frankly, the big theory they had before Lenin, right, was that communism would be part of the natural progress of humanity, right? That was Karl Marx's big thing. They believed it would be people, for example, in the highly industrialized countries who would launch the revolution, which would have been like Germany or Europe at the time, or Germany or England at the time, right? Countries that were in further along in the Industrial Revolution. They also believed that it would happen in advanced capitalist societies. And they also believed it would happen through peaceful means, that it would be a natural development as the worker class revolted or so on, right? That didn't happen with Lenin. What happened instead was that Lenin launched a violent revolution launched by the intelligentsia and the military, and they were not an advanced capitalist system or, you know, an industrialized society. They were an agrarian society. And so it actually went against the entire concept of how a communist revolution would take place. And almost every subsequent communist revolution took place through similar ways. It was almost always done through violent revolution. It was almost always done in more less civilized, less industrialized societies, right? China was, of course, at the time, an agrarian society. Cambodia was agrarian. Most countries that adopted communism were agrarian, and yes, including, you know, Tsarist Russia during the time of the Bolshevik Revolution. Meaning that communism was forced, communism was launched by the people who had the guns and the power. Communism was always carried out in that way. And so it changed a lot of the thinking of the communist, you know, theorists and so on. It went against what a lot of them thought it would be. And so they had to rethink the definitions and the language a little bit. And so socialism is basically, again, the system of governance under a communist system. The other problem they had, of course, was that communism promised utopia. Communism promised this light at the end of the tunnel. Communism promised that once you destroy everything, we'll create the workers' paradise and so on. And what they ended up with instead in every communist system was a dictatorship, was a totalitarian, murderous regime led by, ironically, a class system that had been changed from the poor and the rich or whatever else, you know, however they wanted to define it, to a system where the classes were between the Communist Party and the rest of the population. The Communist Party became the new bourgeoisie. The pigs looked like the farmers, as Orwell framed it, right? An Animal Farm, by the way, great book. And so that shift in it confused a lot of them. In reality, I'd say that's what communism was designed to do in the first place. It was, you know, there's the carrot on the stick. And a lot of people think that carrot is what they're going to get, you know, if they keep chasing that stick. Really, it never happens. What communism does is creates a totalitarian dictatorship, which then uses its hold on power to destroy tradition, morality, and religion. And after they destroy those things, they don't get rid of it. They just take it over. They don't get rid of the factories, the government takes over the factories. They don't get rid of the businesses, the government takes over the businesses. They don't get rid of the farms, they don't get rid of any of the things that exist in free countries. The government takes over those things and seizes it from the people, the individual, while denying future access to those markets to the individual, while saying we're doing it for the people, right? It's that same thing where they accuse others of what they want to do themselves. And so because, again, you know, they didn't give people what they said they'd give them, a lot of people took issue with that. And so Lenin, for example, shortly after the Bolshevik Revolution, published a paper saying that how can we advance towards communism if we fear the stage of socialism? And then he said, in order to realize the communist vision, we first have to have a state of state capitalism, a fancy way of saying, hey, it's capitalism, but the government controls it. And we've come to understand over the course of time that that's actually what communism looks like. When communism takes power, they have their religion. They have their system of beliefs. They have the things they tell you about. They talk about their heaven on earth and so on, right? That's their promise of their religion, of their cult. But what it means in practice is a cult-like system where you can't escape. Everything you do is monitored and controlled, and they carry out acts of violence against anybody who dissents. That's what communism is in practice. And so the in practice part would be the socialist part. And I'd say very much so, it does look a lot like communism, what these folks are doing here. U.S. citizen on the ground is saying, do Democrats think that the people will fall for another Biden basement campaign? I think Biden is trying to win through other means. He's trying to win through an election superstructure. And for some weird reason, he doesn't feel he has to go out and campaign. In fact, he's not doing so well with it, apparently. You know, Trump's holding these giant rallies all around the country. What events has Biden done? He had this fundraiser with Barack Hussein Obama in New York, where ironically, they had like their wealthy financiers come in, and then they were like harassed by pro-Palestinian protesters, many of whom would normally be on the left. But they're having divisions with their own party. You know what I mean? It's not working out so far, at least on the surface, which makes you wonder, where do they think the votes are going to come from, right? Bruce's JT8D, you're saying, this would, by the past reasoning of the federal government, justify a preemptive strike on the government. Yeah, right? So, yeah, that's a funny one. Remember that after 9/11, George Bush said we had to have a preemptive counterattack against Iraq because a bunch of Saudi terrorists bombed the capital, or bombed the World Trade Center. Saudi terrorists bombed the World Trade Center, so we have to invade Iraq. But it's not an attack, it's a preemptive counterattack, right? and it's the same narrative here. We have to save the elections because Trump might question the election if we rig it. Therefore, we have to pre-rig it to make sure he doesn't pre-rig it and establish an election superstructure to make sure that he doesn't question an election superstructure. Pre-rigging the pre-rigging, right? It's the same basic concept, I think. But again, it's the deranged logic we're dealing with, folks. That said, it's great we can see through it. It's great we can talk about it because, frankly, I think having conversations about these things is what helps us recognize it for what it is. That said, thank you all so much for being here. That's all for today. I'll see you all again on Monday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, stay tuned for some big updates on the upcoming documentary, which I know I've been teasing a lot anyways, but we should have a release date soon. Hopefully we'll talk about that soon, folks. Again, please don't forget to share this episode. Help us get the word out on Crossroads. Tell a friend or family member about Crossroads. If you could even just click the share link on this video, share it anywhere you possibly can. Help us get out there. It does help us a lot. And that said, folks, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your support. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.